to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It is Monday, February 1st, 2010, the start of a brand new week. And boy, it's getting very, very strange out there, absolutely. Before we get into the news, I have a comment I want to make here. First of all, the phone lines are open, 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933. Andrew's in the control room today, twiddling the dials, feeding the giant mutant hamster, and waiting for that phone to ring so he can put you on the air with me. The chat room is open. Both chat rooms are open. I reopened the chat room over at Ustream. Everybody on their best behavior, no saying nasty things about the gays, and we'll keep that open, and the webcam is running, and people are already signing in to watch the show. Now, before we get going on the news, one of my normal things that I do before I do this program is I'll look at the regular corporate media and just see, you know, what are they trying to point us at, and what are they talking about? There seems to be a lot of coverage over John Edwards' sexcapades, and now apparently there's a story about a videotape. And I don't have all the fine details, and frankly, I don't care, because it doesn't really affect my life. But I was watching the coverage given to this, and apparently he was having this affair with this videographer that he hired to cover his campaign activity, and also apparently to keep him from being very lonely out there at the campaign trail. And I understand people like to play around. She's a videographer, and they've got cameras, and they're going to play little games. But that's kind of something that you would, especially if you're a political candidate, and especially if you're doing something on the side from your marriage, you sort of keep your hand on those videotapes. And it's either very reckless or something else is going on. And the reason I mention that is I am reminded of the spring of 2001. When the foreign media, the press, and the rest of the world were all talking about how the United States was openly announcing a plan to invade Afghanistan in October of 2001. The whole world was talking about it. It was in BBC, Jane's Defense, all these other newspapers around the world. The only place it wasn't being reported was in the United States, because we were getting all Gary Condit all the time. It was the story about Gary Condit and his sexcapades with Chandra Levy, and where did Chandra go? Was she alive? What was going on? And that was, it was all Condit all day long, every day, 24/7. All Condit all the time, every channel. And from this, we got the word conditized, which means to use a sex scandal as bait in the corporate media to distract the American people from other things that are really going on. Of course, obviously, September came along, 9/11 happened, and we went to invade Afghanistan exactly where on the time schedule that had been announced to the rest of the world in the spring of 2001. Only we in the United States didn't know we were on a schedule because we'd been distracted with the sex scandal. Same thing going back to Bill Clinton and the Whitewater investigation, which was really about government-sanctioned drug running and the profits from those drug deals being laundered through all those savings and loans and used to basically distort the American political structure. That was the real story. What did we get? We got the stained blue dress and Monica Lewinsky. Again, they were using a little bit of sexual bait to distract America, a little tabloidization, to pull us off of what the real scandal was. And I'm looking at all the coverage John Edwards is getting, because I really don't care if he's having an affair with his videographer. And I don't care if they videotaped it. You know, it's, if they sell the videotape and it's any good, who knows? Good luck. Make money. But the coverage this is getting is starting to feel a lot like the Gary Condit. What are we being distracted from? I'm going to be keeping an eye out for that here. All right. Meanwhile, getting on to things, this has been kind of a depressing weekend. And if I seem like I'm in a bad mood today, well, I am. Many, many years ago, I'm really big on sailing. And I mean real sails, not just getting out there in a motorized tub and driving around the water, but I mean real sail, canvas, and or these days Dacron and nylon and everything. My wife and I, we were married on a sailboat. We've done Fiji by tall ship. I have many times been on the reproduction of the Bounty that was used in the Mel Gibson's version of the Bounty movie, and I've even had a chance to take the helm of that, which is a lot of fun unless you're in a really weird crosswind. But one time I just happened to be watching it come into the dock. And I could tell from the approach that whoever was handling the ship that day really didn't know what they were doing. It was coming in too fast and at the wrong angle, and I could see they were luffing the sails and trying to basically slow down, which is hard to do on a sailing ship. And sure enough, we could tell it from like a minute out, it came in and it rammed the dock, and it broke some of the rigging to the stern, specifically the jumper strut. They tore it right off. And it's minor damage. And the point, though, is that when you have that kind of inertia and mass and momentum, and you see it coming and you know there's going to be a disaster and there's nothing you can do to stop it, it's an incredibly frustrating feeling. And I mention it only because I'm going through the same thing today. I see the United States ship of state heading for a collision with the rocks, and the people at the helm, Obama and his crew, not only don't know what they're doing and don't understand the results of what they're doing, they don't want to miss the rocks. They're heading in there. You can see it coming. You know they should avoid it, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. And, of course, I'm talking about this push to start yet another war, this time in Iran. And we're seeing this story. It's all over the news today. The headline is, Iran will deliver telling blow to global powers on February 11th. This is already being spun that Ahmadinejad is going to openly declare hostilities to the Western powers on February 11th, which is the anniversary of the Islamic Revolution. Now, I think it's going to be one of two things. Ahmadinejad, who sometimes I wish he'd close his big mouth, but he is the head of a nation, and he's got an ego the size of his own country, and so he's going to say whatever he feels like saying. But I think it's going to come down to one of two things. Either Iran is going to announce that they're now able to make their own medical isotopes without the need of the Western nations, which Iran is allowed to do under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Or, this is a little more out there, but still very possible, Iran might announce that they have come to a mutual defense treaty with Russia, which would absolutely put the brakes on any further talk of an invasion by the United States. Because as crazy as our leaders are, and as much as Israel could care less if Americans get killed, you know, in a war on Israel's enemies, I don't think anybody wants a war between the U.S. and Russia, because that will go nuclear. That will go World War III. Now, maybe Israel thinks that's a good idea. From Israel's point of view, if the United States and Russia destroy each other with nuclear weapons, that would leave Israel with their nuclear arsenal pretty much in charge of all the Middle East's oil. And de facto, that would give them economic control over the rest of the world. So I don't know. Maybe that's kind of where they're heading. But the bottom line is the propaganda campaign that Iran is bad. We've got to invade Iran because of their nuclear program. It's ramping up. It is really ramping up. We're seeing the fear-mongering going on, another bomb scare hoax. They're talking about all of this, all of these reasons why Iran is really bad, that Israel may lash out. Or rather, Iran may lash out at Israel. And, of course, my comment to that is nonsense. It's a load of baloney. And for those of you who are watching on YouTube, I kind of want to show you on Ustream. I don't know if you can see this very, very clearly, and it's rather small, but this little piece of rock is called Trinitite. And what this is a piece of desert sand that was directly underneath the explosion of the world's first atomic bomb, Project Trinity, hence the name Trinitite. And it's not unlike a fulgurite, which is what you get when lightning hits sandy soil. But the heat of that first bomb basically melted the desert sand into this layer of green glass. Now, the reality is that it doesn't matter if Iran has nuclear weapons or not, which they don't. But even if they did, they're not a threat to the United States. Because any nation that attacks the United States will have their country turned into this stuff. Now, Ahmadinejad is many things, and indeed he can be very, very reckless, but he is also an egomaniac, as is true of any head of state. He's not going to do something that is going to destroy his own nation. He doesn't want a war, especially with the United States. He's trying to avoid one. Iran has not invaded anybody in 200 years. Meanwhile, you've got the United States, which has the world's largest nuclear arsenal and is the only government on Earth psychotic enough to have actually used nuclear weapons on another country. Nobody wants to mess with us. Iran is not a threat for that very reason. We have the ability and the means to turn all of Iran into green glass. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back talking about all the lies the U.S. is using to make it look like it's Iran's fault that we're going to go in and invade and conquer them. We'll be right back.
is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're talking about the very obvious push for a new war in Iran. And again, the reason I think is pretty obvious, besides the fact that Israel wants us to go make war on their enemies. They've been doing it all along here. But the reality is that our government is broke. They don't know how to fix the problem. They're trying to raise taxes on us and say we can't spend any more money on you. And the American people are not buying it. We're not going along with it. During his radio address on Saturday, Barack Obama was talking about how the American people must be prepared for painful sacrifices to get us through that time. Well, I'm sorry. My opinion is that the government got into this mess without our permission, and they can get out of this mess or not without our help. It seems that no matter how much money we pour into this government, they're still going to overspend their budget and borrow more money and stick us with the payments. And think that we're just going to go along obediently with this permanent indebtedness and impoverishment. The budget that came out this morning, they're already talking about a $1.6 trillion deficit. And that's not the debt. That's the deficit. That is how much they're planning on spending that they don't actually have. You and I and the people at the store and the people, you know, down the street, we're not allowed to deficit spend. We have to spend only that which is coming into our pockets, through our jobs, through our various business endeavors. We're not allowed to deficit spend. The government can. They can go on borrowing as much money as they want and sticking you with the bill. They're talking $1.6 trillion for the next fiscal year, a record deficit at a time when we are in the midst of this huge, huge economic downturn. It's a stupid idea. And what they're doing is they're freezing domestic spending, which is in line with austerity measures that might be imposed by the IMF. But the spending on the wars is going like crazy. And I think the bottom line is they're looking back at U.S. past history, where the U.S. government has gotten out of these incredible economic fixes by starting up a war someplace. And then just figuring the American people will go along with high taxes and no services and no domestic spending because, by golly, there's a war on and we've got to fight the war because there's a war. And as long as we know there's a war and spend for the war, then we, the American people, will not complain to the government over the fact that we're being taxed into poverty. Our work product is being destroyed and ground up by the war. That may even be the purpose of the whole war. If you go back to the theory and practice of oligarchical collectivism, the purpose of war is to grind up work product so that the ordinary citizens cannot elevate their lifestyle and their wealth and become a threat to the power structure. Remember, the big lie of capitalism is that we can all be rich. We can't. Capitalism only works if there's a wealth differential imposed from above. A few people can be allowed to be rich. That's what politics selects. But the vast majority of people have to be kept poor in order to keep them working at the 1,000 distasteful jobs on which our society depends. So the government's function, from their point of view, is to intentionally keep all of Americans poor. Inflation allows us to think that we're making more money because the numbers on the paycheck goes up. But the reality is our actual standard of living and our surplus financial means are in decline and have been for almost 20 years. In order to keep us helpless, in order so that when they say there's a war on and there are no jobs, they can get people, young people, to sign up for the military without having to resort to a draft, which would be a political negative in an election year. So that's what's going on here. And the new budget is simply reflecting that. They're taking more money from you than ever before. The tax cuts are going to expire. They're talking about even more new taxes, certainly at the state and county levels we're seeing taxes increase. But domestic spending is frozen, it's being cut back, the budget axe is falling on all the things that make your life better. All the infrastructure is being neglected, has been for decades. That's why we had these out-of-control floods in the Midwest. The flood control systems aren't being repaired, bridges aren't being inspected, so they're starting to collapse. Rail lines aren't being maintained. We're going to start seeing another rash of derailments pretty soon. Dead brush is not being cleared away. We have wildfires all over the place. But by golly, we've got money to spend on bombs. And Barack Obama has just increased the budget for the building and stockpiling of nuclear weapons. Folks, the government has put us on a war footing. All they're looking for is a way that they can convince you that it's the other guy's fault. Now, whether they're just going to go along with all this propaganda about the nuclear threat from Iran and Iran's nuclear program, I don't know. But the bottom line is it's all a lie. They're playing the same lie on you that they did for the war in Iraq, that Iraq had nuclear weapons, that they were a threat, they were going to attack us. This time they're trying to hedge their bets and say, well, Iran could have a nuclear weapon sometime in the future. Yeah, every country on Earth, sooner or later, eventually, is probably going to have a nuclear weapon. In fact, considering that the United States is attacking and destroying countries that don't have nuclear arms, common sense has to tell you that every country out there is trying to get one. As a deterrent, that's the reason to have nuclear weapons. Not as a first strike weapon, but as a deterrent. Again, for all the talk about the threat that Iraq and Iran represents, one and only one country has ever actually used nuclear weapons of mass destruction on the civilians of another country. And the nation that committed that atrocity is the United States of America. And I know I'm going to get a lot of emails from people saying we would have lost more people trying to invade the Japanese mainland. Actually, Japan was trying to surrender at the time the bombs were dropped. Truman dropped the bombs to prove to the rest of the world, especially the Soviet Union, first of all, that we had them, and two, that we were psychotic enough to use them. And that was the geopolitical strategy, and it lasted until the Soviet Union got their own nuclear weapons. So they're pushing for this war. Barack Obama's tightening the screws on Iran. They're trying to pass more sanctions. They're not getting much cooperation from the rest of the world, which I think is kind of fed up with the U.S. throwing its weight around right now. Tony Blair just finally got through the Chilkat inquiry, basically went in and said 9/11 justifies everything we do to the rest of the world, and came right out, and the first thing he said is, you know, now we've got to face the decision to halt Iran's nuclear program. Now, for the umpteenth time, Iran's nuclear program is a power station and medical isotopes. Iran actually is one of the world's largest exporters of isotopes for medical purposes. They go to hospitals, they go to cancer treatment centers, all this kind of stuff. It's for medical purposes, and it's covered by the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Iran is playing by the rules. So was Iraq. It's the United States that has gone rogue and is ignoring the UN declarations. It's the United States that has gone rogue and is in violation of the terms of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. And, of course, Israel refuses to sign the NNPT and to allow IAEA inspections, which, by the way, means that every penny of military financial aid given to Israel by the United States is a criminal act against the American people by the federal government, because it's a violation of the Symington Amendment to the Foreign Appropriations Act. It's illegal to give taxpayer money to any nation that has nuclear weapons technology but has not signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and does not allow IAEA inspections. The federal government is committing a criminal act. They're stealing from you to give to Israel in violation of our own United States law. And, of course, that judge in San Francisco just ruled that we, the American people, may not resort to the courts to force the federal government to obey its own laws. That is how absurd things have gotten to this point. All right, we're going to take a break here. I'm going to get off this war thing because the more I talk about it, the angrier I get. I remember Vietnam and all the people who died in that pointless waste of time, all the people that were killing up in Afghanistan. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking a little bit. We're wrapping up on this situation about the push for the Iran war. I think it's obvious to everybody. Everybody who's paying attention knows the United States is being goaded by Israel to start yet another war with Iran. We're in Afghanistan, we're in Iraq, we're in Pakistan, we're killing 100 innocent civilian Pakistani citizens for every one suspected al-Qaeda terrorist. We don't even know that they're really guilty of anything. Just somebody says, ooh, he's a bad guy. and they blow up 101 people. And yet, we're supposed to consider them the terrorists. Okay. They're talking about going into Yemen. They're talking about going into Somalia. How many wars do we have to start before it really is a world war? And, of course, that is my real concern here. Because if we, the United States of America, invades Iran, I mean, so far, Russia and China have been kind of doing that Neville Chamberlain appeasement thing. All right, we'll let the United States invade Iraq, and maybe they'll just be happy with that, and we'll have peace in our time. But as the world found out when dealing with the Nazis, you know, once you let them go into one country, it's like eating a Chinese meal. 30 minutes later, they're hungry again. They've got to have another country. And that's what's going on. You know, Iraq, Afghanistan, all these countries. And we're covertly in so many more. And now it looks like under the guise of humanitarian relief, we've invaded and conquered Haiti again. It's just amazing. Now, there's a report, we put it up on the front of whatreallyhappened.com, secret CIA Mossad meeting preparation for a new war. Basically, it was reporting that the director of CIA, Leon Panetta, and Israeli officials had gotten together for a confab to talk about Iran's nuclear program. Now, that's not what they talked about, because they know as well as you do that Iran's nuclear program is allowed by the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. They're allowed to build power stations. They're allowed to make the fuel rods for them. They're allowed to produce medical isotopes. They're allowed to use nuclear power for anything that is non-war related. In fact, under Article 4 of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, the United States is obligated to go into Iran and help them build it. If the U.S. were in compliance with their obligations under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, we would be in Iran right now helping to build a power station. And then we would know for an absolute fact that it wasn't really a clandestine nuclear weapons factory like Israel has underneath Dimona. We would know that. There would be no question about it. If we're in there laying the pipes and pouring the cement and helping to solder all the wiring connections, we'd know exactly what the facility was. But, of course, if your goal is to start a war, then there can be no absolutes. You don't want inspections to absolutely find that there's nothing wrong. You want a gray area into which you can dump propaganda and convince the people that, you know, just on the off chance that they might not like us, you know, we got to go in and kill them, which is nonsense. I mean, here's how ridiculous this is. My next-door neighbor has been eyeing my wife, Claire, with obvious ill intent. After all, she's a hot babe. Do I have the right to shoot him because I'm afraid he might rape my wife sometime? No, I don't. I'd be arrested and taken away for murder. And yet, this is exactly the rationale that the United States used to invade Iraq, and they're trying to sell you the invasion of Iran. And they're hoping you're either too stupid or too cowardly to stand up and say, wait a minute, you tried this trick on us before, and it's been exposed. It's a complete lie. So they're out there, and they're pushing that, and it's a ridiculous excuse. And by the way, it's the same one that Adolf Hitler used to march Germany into Poland, again, proving that appeasement didn't work. Hitler sent his own people to destroy, to attack the radio station at Gliwice, Germany. They took a Polish prisoner and shot him dead so the body could be found afterwards. And Hitler got on the radio all across Germany the next day and said, Poland is about to attack us. We have to go kill them first. The U.S. government is using Hitler's strategy and tactics to start a new world war. I don't want to see a new world war. I'm getting sick of hearing about the old one over and over and over and over and over again. I want world peace. I really do. I know it sounds like a cheap cliche, but right now, that's what I want. I want everybody on Earth living and working together, and I want these sociopaths in their marble palaces. If they really want to stay in those marble palaces, let's wall them up inside there. Like Erzsébet Báthory. You want to live in that palace to your own glory? Fine, stay there. Just leave the rest of us alone. Going to go to the phones. Got Randy in Illinois. Aloha, Randy. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike. Love your show, man, and I hear you. think everybody wants peace. I want to, and I could be wrong about this, but I wanted to make a comment on that story you said about at court in San Francisco. I'm not exactly sure how civilian courts work, but when I was in the military, we had to learn a UCMJ, and that was a jurisdictional line between a military court and a civilian court. Now, if that ruling was made in San Francisco, depending on what level, whether it was trial or appellate, that court in San Francisco cannot control, say, a court in Illinois. So his opinion is...
Well, now, this wasn't a jurisdictional issue, and it didn't involve a military ruling anyway. Basically, what it was is, and this got back to this issue of the warrantless wiretaps, but it was a very sweeping ruling in which the judge basically said that people may use the courts to sue the federal government only in the case where there's a provable injury against an individual, and that the U.S. citizenry as a whole could not avail themselves of the federal court system in order to force the government to obey its own laws. And this is a reinforcement of a principle that has been elucidated many times in the courts before. But coming at this particular time, it seems to strike a very jarring and warning precedent, if I said that badly, but the point is, it seems to be reinforcing this idea that the federal government really is above the law, that they're not required to obey their own laws, and certainly from the point of view of ordinary citizens, we do not have the right to use the courts to try and force the federal government to obey their own laws. And clearly, as we're seeing,
What level was that court? Was it the San Francisco Supreme Court, appellate, or a local trial court?
It was a federal court, and I don't remember exactly which court it was. I'll have to go back and take a look. But it's considered a precedent with national implication.
Hey, can you possibly, could you repost that story?
Yeah, I'll hunt it down and put it up after the show today.
Hey, thanks a lot, Mike.
All right, you got it. Thanks a lot for the phone call. Anyway, so we're back to the story here. We're talking about the CIA and Mossad. We're having this meeting. And the story, as it was reporting, saying is that they're there to talk about Iran's nuclear program. Iran doesn't have a nuclear program. So what this CIA-Mossad meeting is all about is they're planning on what they can do to convince you that attacking Iran is the only reasonable choice going into the future. Now, when you were a kid and you had babysitters, and the babysitter would come over to you and say, look, you have a choice. You can either go to bed at 8:30, or you can go to bed at 8 o'clock, and you get to pick. And the kid would say, well, I want to go to bed at 8:30. And would go to bed at 8:30, happy that he'd had some kind of control over his life, not realizing that the goal of the babysitter was to get the kid asleep by 9 when the boyfriend comes over. And very often that is the way these political situations are being presented to you, whether it's two candidates and it doesn't really matter which one you vote for because they're both owned or whatever. But somehow, in the next few weeks, CIA and Mossad are going to try and set up some kind of a circumstance or situation or event or incidents or propaganda which they are convinced is going to convince the majority of the American people that attacking Iran is the only reasonable course of action for the future. Now, whether that's going to be a new 9/11, and there's a lot of warnings about that out there, or if it's simply they're going to just go on saying Iran's got a nuclear bomb and you'd better believe us and we can't tell you how we know, but if you don't trust us, you're an anti-Semite, I don't know. But the push to get this war going, they're trying again. We're going to be right back.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something, by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone, I mean the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. Now, towards the end of last week, we were seeing reports about how the U.S. was sending a whole bunch of warships into the Gulf region, And Iran actually filed a formal complaint with the United Nations saying this is very belligerent for all these warships to be showing up at the edge of our country. And the U.S. basically came out and said that they were stationing these warships in the area to prevent a retaliation by Iran. And that was the word the official U.S. government statement used, retaliation. In other words, the U.S. government has just admitted they are about to engage in an unprovoked attack against Iran. They've as much admitted as, you know, we're coming to bomb you, it's nothing you can do. We're going to make sure that you can't fire back at Israel, even though we all know that Israel's the one who's turning the key on this whole thing. Now, the only bright spot in all of this is apparently while they had all the ships over there in the Gulf and they're glaring at the Iranians and they're rattling their sabers and they're polishing their brass buttons and all the rest of that, they decided to actually run a test on some of this equipment that they have. Now, do you remember back during Operation Desert Storm when April Glaspie tricked Saddam Hussein into going into Kuwait, which gave the U.S. an excuse to go into Iraq and take back all of those really ugly weapons that the U.S. had been giving Saddam, going back to the war between Iran and Iraq. And they went in and they destroyed Gerald Bull's super cannon and all the rest of that stuff. And the United States deployed a bunch of these Patriot missile batteries in Israel to protect poor, dear little Israel from possible retaliation from Iraq, who, for some strange reason, thought that Israel might have had something to do with the fact that their country was being bombed. And in hindsight, for no reason at all, because it turned out Iraq was in compliance with UN resolutions. They did not have any banned weapons of mass destruction. The U.S. just went in and trashed the place, and it's still trashed. We had plenty of guards around the oil ministry because we know what's important in life, but of course the Baghdad Museum was being completely looted. And we were being told that those Patriot missiles were there to protect Israel from incoming Scud missiles, and that had a 95% success rate. Actually, it turned out the success rate was about 50%. The Patriot was not working all that well. And even when they did hit the incoming Scud warheads, the debris was still raining down all over populated civilian areas, which meant had there really been biological weapons, the fact that the missile was intercepted would have made absolutely no difference whatsoever. The biological weapons would have still fallen down on civilian populated territory. As it turned out, Iraq did not have such weapons. Actually, those Scuds were mostly fitted out with cement warheads. That was the extreme limit of the danger that they were fielding there. Now we're talking about this defense test where they're wargaming an Iranian strike, and it turns out that the U.S. defense fails the test. They set up a simulated attack on the fleet with the radar, and the missiles get through. And it turns out the reason the missiles get through is the radar, built by Raytheon, has a bug in it. So now we may have all these ships out there, and every one of them that has that Raytheon system may not work as advertised. And that might be just fine and dandy. It might give some people a little bit of pause, saying that, we don't have the means to actually effectively defend anybody if Iran decides to counterattack when attacked. You know, there's a lot of bluff that goes into weapons development. They put out there, there's this guy they just arrested in Iraq who was selling this explosives detection wand that turned out to be a complete hoax. $85 million before they caught out the fact that these wands don't do anything except make noises and flash pretty lights. And he got away with it because the basic weapons procurement system of the United States government is it's a hive of corruption. It's there to make the favored few a bunch of money off the taxpayers. If you ever get a chance, there's a movie out there called The Pentagon Wars. It was directed by Richard Benjamin, and it's based on a book of the same name written by a colonel who was in the Pentagon during the development of the Bradley Infantry Fighting Vehicle. And it's a funny movie. But it's based on truth, and it shows just how these things happen. So, remember these ships that are out there, the Aegis-equipped radar ships, they've got a history of problems. They've got a history of problems. One of them accidentally shot down an Iranian passenger jet. The USS Vincennes, the computers inadvertently assigned duplicate tracking numbers to two different targets, the passenger jet and an F-14, merged the two and presented to the bridge crew the illusion that an F-14 was very close and approaching them. And so they shot it down, and it turned out to be a passenger jet. And, of course, we all know that a similar software malfunction was behind the accidental shootdown of a 747 TWA-800 off the coast of Long Island, New York, during a test of the Aegis cooperative engagement capability there. It was all hushed up and so forth and so on. But the United Nations, while not listing the details, admits that there have been 26 separate incidents of passenger planes being accidentally shot down by military from around the world. So it does happen. It's a pretty regular, sadly, tragically, kind of a regular thing. That may be another reason why Iran is very upset about these U.S. warships in the Gulf. They have a habit of shooting down passenger planes. So that may be another reason. All right, so it looks like we're having some difficulty with the Ustream feed, and we're coming up on the news break. I'll try and get it restarted during that. But the other story we talked about, U.S. drones in January, they killed three suspected al-Qaeda and 123 civilians. And again, this kind of behavior is not going to win us any friends among the Pakistani people. Meanwhile, Paulson, Secretary Treasury of Paulson, is accusing Russia of disrupting the U.S. economy. And I think the spin here is that, the U.S. government didn't mess up the economy. It's not our fault that TARP failed and all the bailouts impoverished. It's not our fault that the Wall Street corporations are just writing themselves $100 million bonuses. No. It's a dastardly plot by those Russians, and that's why we've got to go to war with them. I mean, at this point, when we've reached the point where they're going to scapegoat the Russians for the economic meltdown, you know we're getting close to the end here. Absolutely. Now, turning over to Israel real quick. Israel, in their formal response to the Goldstone Report from the United Nations. Now, their informal response in the media has been, it's all anti-Semitism, it's all lies, it was all Hamas' fault, and so forth and so on. But Israel has basically come out and acknowledged that, yes, indeed, they had used white phosphorus in civilian populated areas in Gaza. But they meant well. And they punished the two military officers who were responsible. Or at least that's what Israel told the United Nations. The IDF basically came out and said, none of our people have been punished. Nothing's happened to any of our people. So once again, Israel is caught sort of fudging, you know, the reports there. Meanwhile, Ehud Barak is out there making statements about the necessity for peace with Syria. And he basically came out, and this is a quote translated from Barak's statement. In the absence of an arrangement with Syria, emphasis on arrangement, we are liable to enter a belligerent clash with it that could reach the point of an all-out regional war. And this was a statement made to senior Israeli Defense Force officers. Now, what he's saying is that he is demanding that Syria yield the Golan Heights to Israel permanently, or Israel will restart the war with Syria. Israel finds itself in the same place as the United States government. They're broke. They've lost the trust and faith of their own people. They're looking to start a major, major war under which they can wave the flag of patriotism and say, if you're a patriot, you will stand with us during this time of crisis. Well, folks, I got a piece of advice for you. It is not patriotic to follow somebody off the edge of a cliff onto the rocks. It's just stupid. Patriotism is a good thing. Under certain circumstances, I can be patriotic to a government that is worthy of that kind of loyalty and patriotism. But my first patriotism is to my fellow American citizens. And when the government is detrimental to their welfare, I'm sorry, flag waving is not going to work on me. We're going to take a break for news. I'm going to try and get Ustream back up and running, and we'll be back after these words from our sponsors and a news wrap-up. We'll be back in 7 minutes. Aloha.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to hour number two of our show. The Ustream feed is running again, so that seems to have been cleared up here. Again, looking at the corporate media, in between the reports on the sex tape scandal from John Edwards, we're now getting word that they are going to charge Michael Jackson's doctor with behaving badly. Apparently, Jackson had six different medications in his system when he died. And, rock star dies of drug overdose. It's hardly news anymore, rather sadly. I actually worked with Michael Jackson on a couple of occasions, and I remember looking at him and just, it's such a messed up individual. When you get that successful that young and you got that many people around you who are so dependent on you for their own wealth and power and position that they're just going to fawn all over you, that's going to mess anybody up. I think the reason that Michael Jackson was trying to turn his home into sort of a little Disneyland and playground was that he never was allowed to have his own childhood. And so he's trying to recapture that. Now, that doesn't excuse what he was doing with the other little boys, but I think I understand a little bit of where he was coming from. All right, now getting back to more serious matters. We were talking about Israel when we went to the news break. I couldn't believe it when I read this story. It's up at whatreallyhappened.com. The headline is, Israeli organ traffickers blame the Holocaust. And I am not kidding. They're talking about the Israeli response to the various news reports around the world that Israel has been engaging on a massive scale in the illegal harvesting and sale of organs. You know, we had this rabbi that was arrested on the east coast of the United States, was involved in black market organ sales. Palestinian families from many, many years have been saying that Israelis are taking organs from the bodies of people that they kill in Palestine, and those are going on the black market. They're going back to Israel, and Israel's government has a policy where it is legal to harvest organs within Israel, which shouldn't apply to the occupied territories, but it does. There have been allegations of organ harvesting pretty much all over the world for organs to go back to Israel. So there was a scandal in South America and so forth and so on. So anyway, let me read this from you. This is a direct quote from the original article. In her Form 13 lecture, Shepherd Hughes discussed the two motivations of Israeli traffickers. One was greed, she said. The other was somewhat chilling. Revenge, restitution, reparation for the Holocaust. She described speaking with Israeli organ brokers who told her it's kind of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. We're going to get every single kidney and liver and heart that we can. The world owes it to us. This apparently is the mindset of the Israeli organ harvesters, that the world owes Israel their spare organs, or not spare organs, because of the Holocaust. If that even had the beginnings of a shred of legitimacy, go after the German people. But to be harvesting organs from the Palestinians because of what Germany supposedly did in the first half of the last century, that's absurd. It is a crass generalization. And not only that, I think it's insulting to the people who really did suffer under the Nazi horrors. When you use them for such shameless activity, I can't imagine anybody who was actually in the Nazi slave labor camps being willing to go along with this. Yes, exploit my memory to justify stealing bodily parts from other people. Nobody's going to go along with that. I wouldn't go along with it. Rather than let somebody use the circumstances of my life and death as an excuse to go out and commit these atrocities, I would want to vanish without a trace. Let me go anonymously. Nobody needs to remember me because I don't want anybody to use my name to justify stealing organs from other people. I mean, it seems to be like no matter what Israel gets caught doing, their first excuse is, oh, I'm doing this because of the Holocaust. The world owes it to us because of the Holocaust. I'm sorry. I had nothing to do with the Holocaust. It happened before I was born, and I'm sick of hearing about it. Certainly as an excuse for the atrocities and crimes that are taking place today. It's amazing. According to the Shepherd Hughes, she even heard Israeli doctors saying that it was okay to harvest organs because of the Holocaust. It's amazing. Now, there's another brouhaha regarding European Parliament President Jerzy Buzek, who basically tends to lump the Nazi genocide together with the communist purges. because they're all genocides. And the Holocaust industry, as Norman Finkelstein likes to refer to it, got all upset because the Holocaust, with a capital H, is a trademark brand of Israel. And there isn't supposed to be another one. They own it. There's the Holocaust. And there may be some other unpleasantness in the rest of the world, but they're not to be equated because they feel it dilutes their branding. I mean, most people these days are coming away from movies and TV and even public education with the idea that the Nazi atrocities were aimed solely at the Jewish people, and that's not true. Even if we accept the orthodox number of 6 million Jews dead in the slave labor camps, most of from typhus, I might add, the total number of dead in the camps is estimated at 13 million. So the Jews made up less than half. The rest were Poles, gypsies, mentally retarded people, gays, anybody who didn't fit in with the Nazi ideal of Aryan, whatever that was supposed to mean, got dumped in the slave labor camps. When the typhus epidemics hit, everybody was dying. Even the camp guards were dying. So it was not a Jewish-only enclave. Second of all, again, if you accept the orthodox number of 6 million Jews who died in the Nazi slave labor camps, that's still, you know, you've got 20 million who were killed by the communists during their purges, another 20 million killed by the Chinese in their purges. I mean, history is full of genocides. And the bottom line is, as bad as the Nazis were, you know, they killed far less people than the communists in Russia and the communists in China. And history is full of these genocides, and they go back to the dawn of mankind. All right, we're going to go to the phone call. We've got Don in New York City. Aloha, Don. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, how's it going tonight?
Going just fine. What's on your mind?
Heard you mention the new book out by Secretary Paulson.
Yes.
That it was his theory that Russia wanted to submarine the U.S. economy.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a little research on it. In 2008, Russia held $65.5 billion worth of Fannie Mae, Fannie Mac bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And with six months to the end of 2009, they dropped their holdings to zero.
Mm-hmm.
So they essentially sold off $65 billion in 6 months of holdings, dropped it to zero.
Yeah.
And they were trying to encourage the Chinese to do the same, and the Chinese didn't go along with it. But
mm-hmm.
So, you know, it just it's quite a quite a sudden drop in holdings. And, I mean, I agree with you on one point that, you know, that shouldn't be the end-all for our economy, that we can't, you know, point the finger on that specific action and say that did it. But certainly, you know, it is a dramatic fact.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, it sounds like a big number to you and me. It is a huge number when you compare it to like the $20 trillion that was being handed out for the bailouts and TARP. It's really small change and not really, you know, able to carry out that kind of an impact on our economy. And probably Russia was smart enough to realize that the bottom was about to fall out of the subprime mortgage industry, and probably they acted in their own self-interest, which you would expect them to do. But this idea of Paulson wanting to say that it's a deliberate plot by the Russians to bring us down, $65 billion isn't enough money to do that. Now, as far as the Chinese are concerned, you know, we're seeing this in intensive provocation from Hillary. I think the U.S. thinking is that if we can create a diplomatic crisis with China, then we can stiff them on the debt the U.S. owes to them, that all of their debt holdings will be suddenly worthless. Like I said, history has shown that whenever the U.S. government gets into this kind of an economic hole, they try and invade and conquer their way out of it. And I think they're getting ready to do it again. Look how hard they're trying to start a war with just about everybody. They're trying to, you know, we've got missiles pointed at Russia again. Now we're trying to annoy the Chinese. You know, it's pretty obvious what's going on here. Paulson's book is an attempt to put the blame for our own domestic evils onto the Russians as part of war propaganda for what could very well be the next world war. Thank you very much for the phone call. We're going to let you go here. When we come back from these words and responses, we'll be talking with Mike in Georgia. Until we get back, aloha.
The GCN Radio Network.
providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're going to go right to the phones. Mike in Georgia. Aloha, Mike. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Well, I want to talk about the Holocaust, because I've lived on two of the Holocaust sites. I lived in the Ohio Valley. I think people really need to take a look at what happened to the Shawnee Confederation. It was pretty sad. Mm-hmm. I'm in Georgia now, and they take a look at the Trail of Tears. And I lived not, you know, I used to be able to walk down to John Rankin's house, so I'm pretty familiar with the atrocity of the, you know, because he was really involved in the Underground Railroad. And I'm wondering how much time they're given to these atrocities and concerns in Israel. And while we're playing about, you know, one people's atrocity as opposed to these.
Well, because Israel, you know, uses the Holocaust to raise money and to basically guilt the rest of the world into going along with whatever Israel wants, which includes at the moment committing exactly the same kind of atrocities on the Palestinian people. I mean, Israel's even admitted they threw white phosphorus into, you know, occupied residential areas, which is considered a war crime. But the bottom line is, anytime you criticize Israel for anything that they do in terms of stealing other people's lands, you know, the Holocaust is their justification for everything, including, you know, stealing other people's organs.
Well, that's
why they're going to spend as much money as they need to, and they're going to use all their political influence. That's why we have Holocaust museums all across the United States of America.
But it's for the wrong Holocaust. That Holocaust didn't take place in America. I still have.
I agree with you. Why are all the Holocaust museums here? Because we didn't do the Holocaust. In fact, what about all the Americans who sacrificed life and limb to prevent Hitler, to keep Hitler from completing whatever his plan was?
Yeah,
you know, let me finish this. The attitude from Israel continues to be that whatever we did, then or now, it's never going to be enough to atone for this sin that they have arbitrarily jumped all over the rest of the world. It's like this article said about the Israeli organ brokers who are justifying what they do on the terms of the Holocaust. They say the world owes it to us. Not the Nazis owe it to us. Not Germany owes it to us. The world owes it to us. This is a con job. They're using the Holocaust to extract money and political favors, and I think pretty much the rest of the world is sick and tired of just hearing about it, without even going into the debate about how accurate the Orthodox story is. And I don't think it's very accurate at all. I think if there's a lesson that we can take away from Saddam's nukes and Climategate and Swinegate and all the rest of that, it's that the American people are the most lied to people on the face of the earth, that our corporate media is feeding us a load of bovine excrement to trick us out of money and agreement with various agendas, including that of Israel.
Well, I wanted to talk about one more point about authority and responsibility. And I know you're pretty technical, so no doubt you've had trig and you understand about vector components. And when you're identifying direction, in the end, you have to go back to the axis. You still with me?
Yes, I'm with you.
You have to go back to the axis and look and see which direction it's pointing at to determine whether it's positive or not. Okay, if you're drilling, down's the positive direction. But if you're shooting something up in the air, you know, a missile, then up's the positive direction.
Well, I think it gets...
With politics, the origin is supposed to be at the base. All the authority and, you know, it's supposed to be personal responsibility. And the authority is invested in us. And then it goes to the state level, and they have a duty that one of their responsibilities is to protect our sovereignty.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And unfortunately, they've abandoned that. I mean, basically, all governments formed by the populations start with the authority at the base and the function of the government is to obey orders. And then over time, because the people get complacent and government inevitably becomes corrupt and political power attracts the kind of people who shouldn't have it, the situation reverses and civil servant becomes civil master. That's where we are right now. And we're at the stage right now where the American people need to recover that freedom to say, no, no, I will not be lied to anymore. No, I will not go along with wars based on lies. No, you may not have my children to fight wars for Israel. No, you may not have any more of my money to pay off an unpayable debt and impoverish us when you spent that money without our permission. We need to be a people that knows how to say no. There is no freedom without the freedom to say no. Until we regain the ability to say no, we are slaves.
Well, Ron Paul spoke about this real well when he was talking about nullification and state sovereignty, and I'd suggest everybody take a look at that video.
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of Ron Paul. I hope he's going to run again. I'll support him again. Unfortunately, as we saw in the last election, the oligarchs that we have in our country are absolutely in control of the political process and the media, and they will not let anybody into play who is not there to make them richer and more powerful still.
Well, he was talking about the state's responsibility to nullify illegal orders, just like it's an individual's responsibility not to follow an illegal order.
Well, I'm definitely following that independent right or that individual right to ignore orders that are illegal or immoral. But the states, unfortunately, have been hamstrung ever since.
They have a responsibility to do it. They're just not doing it.
Yeah, well, I mean, we have a lot of people in government at all levels who are shirking their responsibilities. Congress should have impeached the last couple of presidents several times over, and they didn't do that. What? Okay, well, I guess that was the call there. We're going to switch over to Glenn in Pennsylvania. Aloha, Glenn. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Good evening, Mike. You do a good job of assigning really useful terminology to things. You've used a couple words tonight that I find very useful in describing all this, and those are sociopaths and oligarchy.
Yes.
And I think that is the essence of what we see worldwide. It cuts across, you know, it's cross-cultural, it's all religious and ideological boundaries and that sort of thing. Alan Watt is fond of talking about, you know, what is now a somewhat archaic term, the hysterical attention-seeking sociopath. That wouldn't be in the modern DSM. But I think we see a lot of these places, a lot of people, I've been down the road of reading all the different, you know, books about it's the you know, Freemasons this and the Jesuits that and the Trilateral Commission and the CFR and the Jews and all the different groups. Everybody's trying to pin the tail on the donkey as if, to, you know, for some reason they think that if they figure out, if they know who the leading group is, the Trilateral Commission or the Group of 30 or whatever, that they figured something out, that they've done something useful. It really doesn't change anything.
No, they've fallen for a trap. They've fallen for a trap. Okay,
yeah.
Because, you know, this whole thing about, you know, we're looking for the Illuminati and we're looking for these secret cabals that are out there running the world. It's a feint. The people who are running the world are the ones right in front of you, in front of those podiums, you know, the Nancy Pelosi's who are flying their own kids around the world with military aircraft at your expense. They're the ones. And they're the ones who are the cause of the problem. There is no there past them. They'd like you to think they are.
Well,
they would love for...
There might be. I mean, there might be.
No, Glenn. No, thank you. We're going to have to let you go. We're at the end of the segment. But this idea that there is some secret cabal beyond the government that we see, yeah, there's a lot of players in the background, but this idea that there's an Illuminati or you know, a Masonic conspiracy, that is a false trail to trick you into turning away from the people who are really the threat to your life, and that is the U.S. federal government. They would love for you to go off chasing Masons or Illuminati. It's a false trail. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far $5.15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And and aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We've got a lot of little tiny news stories to cover here. If you go over to the front page of whatreallyhappened.com, you'll see a story with a video, so maybe you can't keep your current coverage. And basically, it's a clip from Barack Obama answering questions about Obamacare, in which he admits that in its current form, if Obamacare passes, you may not be allowed to keep your current health plan, and you may not be allowed to keep your current doctor. It'll basically be that it'll be up to the insurance companies. You'll be assigned to an insurance company, and they will determine the scope and quality of your care and who you will go to see to get it. And that, of course, was a big sticking point because Americans still think they ought to have the freedom to determine who gets to touch their body, not counting the airports, of course. Now, interesting story. Apparently, the Central Intelligence Agency has now lifted the ban on their agents moonlighting for American corporations. Now, of course, it's sort of been happening all along anyway, and there was kind of a nudge-nudge, wink-wink, but hard on the heels of the U.S. Supreme Court removing all restrictions on corporate political advertising, the CIA has basically said, okay, well, the corporations are now persons, so the CIA can go to work for them on the side. And this is rather significant because remember that that break-in into the phone system of Senator Mary Landrieu's New Orleans office? It turns out that all four men arrested at that break-in had been trained by the CIA. One of those arrested, Stan Dye, or Day, is listed as an operations officer at the Department of Defense Irregular Warfare Program. And he's an expert on surveillance, explosives, training, assassination, and false flag operations. He was arrested a couple of blocks away from Landrieu's office with a covert receiver managing the bugs that were being planted in the office. Now, this is important because, remember, when this first happened and the guy from Acorn was arrested, Rush Limbaugh went on the air to excuse away the operation, saying, no, 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 they weren't there planting bugs or doing anything nefarious. They were there investigating the fact that people who were calling Senator Landrieu's office were complaining they could never get through and they could never get heard. And so these guys, they were just checking out the phone system to see if maybe something bad had been done. No, they were planting bugs. They're trained by the CIA. We don't know who they were working for. And with this announcement by the Central Intelligence Agency, they could have been working for anybody. They could have been working for the GOP. Could have been working for Landrieu's opponent in the next election. We don't know. We need to find out. But basically, the CIA, funded and trained at taxpayer expense, is now a mercenary army available for hire to the corporations. Now, one more comment about that idea of corporations being persons. Now, corporations are not people. They're not human beings. They don't have flesh and blood. Corporations are not even sentient. So this idea that corporations are person entitled to free political speech is nonsense because corporations aren't speaking. They're not engaging in free speech. Their handlers, their custodians, their janitors, their guardians are engaging in that free speech. But if they're using the money of the corporation to engage in their acts of free speech, that may be misappropriation. Because no corporation can pass a competency test. They can't speak. They're not sentient. They can't vote. They don't have the intellectual capacity to vote. Therefore, this idea that they are taking part in the exercise of a political franchise, I think, is a little ludicrous. Corporations cannot be drafted and sent off to die in wars. They also cannot die, period. Unless they go out of business. They are functioning legal demigods. They never die and surrender their wealth to the system. When you or I die, any wealth that we manage to have clung on to for our entire lifetime, the state gets a chunk of it in death and estate taxes. Corporations don't go through that. They accumulate wealth across numerous generations until they become so rich they're functioning as gods. But they are not sentient creatures. And they may not be protected by the First Amendment, for the very simple reason that under the 13th Amendment, if corporations are legal persons, they may not be owned, nor may they own another person or corporation. This means that every stock certificate in the United States of America just became worthless. So if corporations, as legal persons, are not protected by the 13th Amendment, then they're not covered by the First Amendment. I think the Supreme Court erred very greatly on this one. If the corporate officials want to exercise their First Amendment rights, they can do so, using their own personal money to do so. But to use the corporation's money, it is no different than if a very rich, elderly individual is being cared for in a nursing home, and the nursing home decides to use this patient's money to advertise their business. That would be considered misappropriation of funds. It would be punishable by jail. And the same thing applies here. If the corporation is a person entitled to the right of free speech, the corporation can speak if it has the ability to do so, but it doesn't. The corporate officers are not the same thing as the corporation. They are custodians and trustees of the corporation. And whether they have a right to spend the corporation's money to support their own political agenda, which is really what's being talked about here, is another matter entirely. But as I said, if corporations are not under the authority of the 13th Amendment, they're not under the authority of the First Amendment. Now, turning to some domestic news here, as you know, last October, a Muslim cleric, an imam, Lugman Abdullah, was shot 21 times in less than 5 seconds by the FBI when they raided a warehouse. No reason was given. They just kicked open the door and opened fire, and the guy was shot 21 times in 5 seconds. If this had been a Catholic priest or a Jewish rabbi, I think the media would have lit up. But because now in the United States of America, it is appropriate to dismiss the woes of Muslims, just as it was legal to do to the Jews in Nazi Germany, there's no big stink about it. Oh, it's just a Muslim imam. We can gun him down. It's open season on the Muslims this time. Like I said, our government is playing the Nazi plan all over again. We have a targeted scapegoat racial minority that we're all supposed to hate and blame everything on, while the government sets up hoaxes and lies us into war after war after war. They're following the Nazi game plan, and it is going to end exactly the same way with the United States in a ruin. Look how Germany came out of World War II, at the end of World War II. Look at what Germany was. That is our future if we don't pull away from this path to more wars that our government is trying so hard to sell us. If you do nothing else for me this week, you've got to talk to your friends and family about the rush to war with Iran. And just ask them, how many wars do we have before we've started the new world war? And remind them, you were lied to about Saddam's nuclear weapons. You're probably being lied to about Iran's nuclear weapons. This is not an issue in which you can stay silent. To stay silent is to concede defeat to the war hawks. As I said in the other segment in that phone call, we need to become an American people who can say no. There is no freedom without the freedom to say no. If we are unable to say no to our government on another war, then we are not free. We are slaves. We are slaves. If the government can send us off to war against our will, if it can tax us into poverty against our will, then we are slaves. We don't have any freedoms. We have a few indulgences that really don't affect the outcome of what the government wants. We can vote red or blue, and the end result is going to be the same, as Obama has proven with his term in office. We voted for change. We got more of the same. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with the last segment of our show after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Go down and God.
tonight. And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. Last segment here. A couple of really quick stories. We had a lot to talk about today, and I'm going to have to hold some of it over until tomorrow. Now, a couple of news from the world of the police officers to protect and to serve when they bloody well feel like it. Trial dates have been set for two police chiefs who stand accused of illegal activities stemming from a celebrity scandal involving a local surrogate mother. And I don't really care to get into the surrogate mother issue, but apparently these two police chiefs identified this woman who was having a baby as surrogate for the celebrity couple and decided they were going to obtain items from the home to sell to souvenir hunters on eBay. So they're in jail now. Former Hope Dale Police Department chief has been arrested for sex charges, apparently from taking advantage of a juvenile in his custody. Let's see, Portland Police Chief Rosie Sizer is saying that an officer who was attempting to help a man who'd set himself on fire sprayed him with pepper spray. And finally, this last one, and this is on the front page today. Arrested TSA worker asked girl to be his sex slave. Apparently a 15-year-old girl, and he's fondling her and feeling her up and just says, hey, would you like to be my sex slave? And at that point, somebody actually arrested this guy. It is so rare for these bozos to be arrested. But apparently he's in jail now, and good. By the way, if you're at all interested, we have a new T-shirt at our Where Really Happens store. It says TSA across the front in block letters. It looks like those official shirts they give to the government people. And underneath it says Tourism Suppression Agency. And those are very popular here on the Hawaiian Islands. I understand a lot of people over at the airports are already starting to order these things, or at the airlines are starting to order these things. U.S. consumer spending weaker than expected. Okay. Now, this is kind of interesting. We are always seeing these stories about this or that economic aspect didn't turn out as expected. All right. Well, this undermines the credibility of the experts. And basically what it is they're always trying to tell us green shoots, things are getting better, then they don't get better, and they say, well, it wasn't what we expected, but we're going to keep on trying. Okay, well, if the economy keeps performing differently than the government expects, then how do we know we're really in a recovery? I mean, everything the government has said about what the economy was going to be doing for the last 6 months turned out to be bovine excrement. So now we're going into an election year, and they're saying, hey, things are great. They're looking up. We're doing wonderful. Vote us back into office. I don't think so. I'm not seeing a recovery out here in the economy. Things are still pretty bad. I'm seeing a lot of empty retail spaces. We're getting a report now that the $700 billion TARP program never met its key goals. The money just vanished from the public treasury and went into the bankers' pockets. Basically, we're hearing now the CEO of Goldman Sachs is getting a $100 million bonus. Forget the salary. He's getting a $100 million bonus. The bailout, TARP, and all the other various programs they had took trillions of dollars from the American people, and they gave it to the banks so the banks could loan it back to the people at interest. But the bankers just gave that money to themselves as bonuses and salary increases. When Obama talks about domestic spending freezes, what he is saying is, I'm sorry, we took the money that we should have spent on roads and schools and hospitals, and we gave it to the bankers. And so now we don't have anything left to spend on you, but we're going to go on spending more and more on war. The new budget that came out today is basically forecasting two consecutive years of $160 billion in war funding. It's gone up. He's asking for more money for more troops in Afghanistan and Iraq. Remember when he was saying just a week ago, I'll have them out of there by August. Obviously not. Obviously not. We're seeing the country's on a war footing. Every resource the country has is focused on war. We're down to 4-day school weeks here in Hawaii. Those kids want an education, have them sign up for the military. We'll give them a rifle and all the training they need. Drop them over in whatever it is, Stan, that we're going to be invading next week. This country is on a war footing. They're just waiting for a starting time for the next invasion. And as I keep asking time and again, and I've yet to get an official answer at least, how many wars does the U.S. have to be fighting before it's a world war? And when the United States attacks Iran, will we be at war with Russia? That will be a serious situation. I don't want a new world war. We're going to lose it. We will wind up being as badly destroyed by the next world war as Germany was destroyed by the war that Hitler started. Since the dawning of the Industrial Age, every major war has been lost by the country that initiated it. You just think about that one. Every major war has been lost by the country that initiated it. And here we are, the United States, we're initiating wars all over. So that they can wave the flag at you and wave it in front of your eyes so much it'll be a blindfold. And you won't see what's really going on out there. I think everybody needs to do what Zogby did out here in Hawaii. You start taking a drive up the wrong roads and start looking at what's really going on out in the heartland. And see how bad things really are out in this country. We don't have the economic resources to sustain a major war. We don't have the manufacturing capacity. We don't have the productivity to sustain the kind of material production that it takes to support a major war. The U.S. government is making the same strategic mistake that Adolf Hitler did. They're relying on their wonder weapons, the high-tech magical boxes in the sky that will inflict death at the push of a button. Hitler thought those were going to win the war for him. The V-1, the V-2, his stealth bomber that we're only just now finding out about, all these wonderful little high-tech weapons, and they were amazing devices for the time, no question. And Hitler still lost the war because he didn't have enough boots on the ground and he didn't have enough material support to take care of the army that he had. And he lost the war and Germany suffered for it. We're in the same historical path to the same historically inevitable result. And the only people who can stop it are you, who are listening to the show and watching this broadcast and reading the website. I know the most frustrating thing about being opposed to war is there's never a moment in time that you can point to where you can say, I've won. There's just those horrible, sickening moments where you know you've failed. And I fear that we're coming up on one in the next couple of weeks. Because I think once the U.S., if the U.S. succeeds in tricking the American people into a new war in Iran, there'll be no turning back. It will just escalate from there until it really is a world war. And it will be a war with Russia and China on the other side, and they really do have nuclear weapons of mass destruction. And the problem is, when the United States reaches the point where it realizes it's losing the conventional war on the ground, it will resort to its nuclear weapons rather than surrender. And that's when everything's going to start coming apart. I really would like to avoid that. I think you would too. And you need to understand that the culture in Washington, D.C. right now, they're living in this little bubble of idealistic wishful thinking that their magic weapons are going to just it's all going to be a clean war and all the death and destruction is going to happen to somebody else and they won't have to look at it, and that when it's all over, God is going to come down and invite the good guys up to the big house. You need to look at our leadership and understand how few of them have ever actually tasted combat and know what it really means and know what it does to the people around them. And I'm sorry to be on such a down note on today's show, but I'm upset. I'm watching this happen. It's like watching a beloved child die of this cancer eating them away. And I'm seeing that happen to the United States. Our government has put us on a war footing. They're getting ready to start another war. The only way that we will avoid this new world war is for Americans to discover they have the freedom and the right to say no to the government. And we have to do it. It's a survival skill now. It's not an option. It's not a fashion statement. It is a survival necessity. And on that note, I'm going to let you go here. You've heard enough of me talk for one day. We'll be back tomorrow, Tuesday, at 5 p.m. Central here on the Genesis Communication Network. So until then, stay safe, stay well, hug your loved ones, get angry, get skeptical. Learn to say no. And aloha, America.